Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey there, and welcome to the Dom Harvey podcast, brought to you by Radix Nutrition. Coming up, Gilda Kirkpatrick.
Tehran is a city of 20 million. Big city. It's so huge, you know. The smell is everywhere, you know.
Just the smell of death.
Yeah. You don't forget things like that, you know. It was all these young, happy, hopeful people. You know, they come back in bits and pieces like minced meat.
Do you have nightmares about it or anything?
No.
Yeah, Gilda Kirkpatrick. If you have ever watched reality TV, you may think you know Gilda from Real Housewives of New Zealand or her very short run on Dancing with the Stars. Or maybe you think you know her from the gossip pages, which generally label her a socialite or a gold digger. But there is so, so much more to Gilda Kirkpatrick than any of that. And this is part of her story. Gilda, as you have never heard her before. We talk about growing up in war-torn Iran before moving to New Zealand as a teenager and how these early years and the unimaginable things that she saw and experienced shaped her into the person she is today. We discuss her stance as a COVID anti-vaxxer, how her relationship developed with a man 40 years older than her, and her thoughts on being labelled a gold digger. Then we discuss her appearances on reality TV, her thoughts on cosmetic surgery, what life looks like in one of Auckland's most recognisable mansions, and much, much more. Gilda is a breath of fresh air with a great perspective and outlook on life, and I really hope you guys enjoy this episode as much as what I did. Thank you so much to Radix Nutrition for sponsoring this episode. Get amongst their incredible protein powder and smoothie recovery powders. I am obsessed with their banana-flavoured protein, but they now have an unflavoured protein powder in their range as well. So you can mix it into various recipes and it won't taste any difference. The reality is most of us could do with much more protein than what we're currently consuming, and protein powder is the best way to get it. And nobody does this as well as Radix. Check them and their world-class products out at radixnutrition.co.nz. Radix is spelled R-A-D-I-X. Trust me, you won't regret it. I'm a big fan, and I'm sure you guys will be as well. Okay, let's get into the episode. Gilda Kirkpatrick on the Dom Harvey podcast. Enjoy. Gilda Kirkpatrick. Oh, I'll start again.
How do you want to start? Boy, are you nervous? You're the guy with the questions.
But you're intimidating. I find you intimidating.
What have I ever done to you?
No, nothing.
We always had fun.
We have, and I love you, but you're very intelligent, and I find that intimidating.
Oh.
Okay, here we go. Take two. Actually, I might leave that in. Gilda Kirkpatrick, hello. Welcome to my podcast.
Hello, Dom.
Thanks so much
for having me here.
Now, you just told me before that you and your friend Louise, who's sitting here. Hi, Louise. You looked up some clips online on the way over, and that's the first you knew about the podcast.
Oh, no. I've known about your podcast, but I just wasn't sure about it. I was like, oh, I wonder, like I better go and check if it's, like, in a two setting, people. It's a one setting. And I was like, oh, my God, this is camera in your face all the time. So now I knew I just needed a refreshment.
Right. You're worried about how you look. You look amazing.
Everybody worries about how they look.
Yeah, do that.
As human beings. Yeah. Some are more verbal about it. Some are less verbal. But I think most human beings, because of their consciousness, they are aware of how they look and, you know, it's nothing to be ashamed about.
Yeah, but you and I are the same age. We're both 1973 babies.
We are.
Both 50. Look at me. I look like a sack of shit. And
no, you don't. Well, whatever. You're just fishing for a compliment.
Absolutely not. No, hey, thanks for coming over. You're I wanted you on the podcast, and I thought you'd be a great guest because you're such an intriguing woman, and there's so much to your story, and there's so much about you that so many people have preconceived ideas about, and you don't need to meet you or have much to do with you to realise that there's a lot going on. You're very smart.
You know, I've always sort of had this thought or this approach that, you know, if you underestimate people, it is your loss. You know, if you think, oh, everybody's stupid, it is your loss, because then you, there will come a time where you go face to face with somebody or people that you discounted, and you realize that everybody has got a certain level of intelligence and understanding, and to discount that is, it doesn't take anything away from me. You know, it's just your own loss.
And a lot of the things that I guess people say about you would be that you're a gold digger,
sure.
Which I feel like that's a New Zealand tall poppy thing, potentially. Like a jealousy thing, potentially? What are you?
It's just something that has been, it actually, I don't think it's just New Zealanders that use that terminology. And I don't have a problem with it, you know.
I know you don't. You don't. Yeah. You literally don't care.
I don't
and
care.
I wish I was more like you.
No.
you don't give a fuck.
No, you can say whatever you like to me, and I really don't. It doesn't bother me, because at the end of the day, it is me. I put my head on my pillow and go to sleep knowing who I am. You know, you come and tell me I have four legs. Is that going to bother me? I'm going to be scared of myself thinking, oh my God, what, you know, am I? No, I know who I am. And, you know, these labels kind of just shows how lazy people are to do their own sort of investigation or to get to understand somebody before attaching labels.
Mm. And I love that. I love that attitude about you, because it'd be easy to be defensive about it, because it's rude of people to assume something about you that they don't actually know. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but, you know, being rude is not a crime. People are entitled to their thoughts and opinions. Okay. You know, if that's going to make them feel better about themselves, calling me a gold digger, then for sure. Go ahead and do that.
Well, we'll get to the whole gold digger thing later on. I'd also like to talk about your reality TV experiences, your Dancing with the Stars, which I believe you hate it, and Real Housewives of Auckland. But first of all, let's go all the way back. So you're from Iran.
Yes.
Born the same year as me, 1973. So the first 7 years of your life feeling normal, and then the Iran-Iraq war?
Well,
what was the
about six, the revolution happened.
Okay.
And then very shortly followed by invasion of Iran by Iraq, Saddam Hussein. Yeah.
Right. You'll have to assume I'm the dumbest person in the room, because I am. I know very little about geography and wars and history, but I'd love to pick your brains about this. So I saw a photo of you. I think it was from an article you did in Woman magazine.
Right.
And there's this beautiful photo of you, and you're like six or seven, and you're smiling, and you're on a horse, and the horse is on its hind legs. So fairly normal childhood, nice childhood?
Yes.
Like, what are your recollections of the first few years?
Great childhood. Well, in saying that, my parents always, you know, had had issue with each other. Very, very different characters. And they got married and had my sister. And 4 years later, I came along. But I think by the time I came along, they realized that they were absolutely not compatible.
Just two different people.
Just very different people. Yeah. My mom is, you know, she's got a very unique character, and, you know, she's very specific about certain things. And my dad is a bit easygoing, and, you know, just not, they weren't a good match. But he was with us until about, I was six, I think, just when the revolution happened, and then they separated. They are still not divorced, but, you know, separated. Until then, I had a great childhood. I loved my dad, loved my mom. We traveled, had a great life. There was nothing really that, you know, I would say my childhood was amazing. You know, great memories,
awesome.
Great experiences. Yeah.
And are your parents both still alive?
Yes.
Yeah. Where do they live? Do they live in New Zealand or Iran?
They come and go.
Right.
Yeah. At the moment, both of them are in Iran.
Right. They like it there?
Yes, 100%. Like, they like the food there. It's their community. They can communicate with whoever they want. They have, you know, old friends and relatives that, you know, are still there. And it's a very rich, culturally rich, historically, you know, beautiful country. Every part of it is beautiful. It's a very, very beautiful place. And people are actually very, very nice. They're very warm. And, you know, everywhere you go, you know, any house, you put five Iranians together, they start playing music and dancing. And so, yeah, the political situation is terrible. And the country is basically, you know, like has been taken as hostage collectively. All the people are hostages within their own land. And they have been for the past 44 years. That's the sad part. But it doesn't, you know, people put up with the status quo because they still love the country. They love the air, the food, the view, the land, you know.
Yeah. So did you and your sister move to New Zealand with your parents or just?
No.
So you just moved here on your own. Yeah. How old were you? So you were like 17?
16, 17, yeah.
So she was, and she was like 20, 21?
20.
That's a big move at that age. Were you scared or did it make it easier because you were with your big sister?
No. I was actually more like, my sister is way more cautious than
right,
I am.
Right.
She's more reasonable than I am. But no, because, you know, a lot of people are, I guess, who grew up in that at the same era as I did, and especially with my family falling apart, you know, do you imagine one day you live normally and then your father is gone, and then there is this revolution that's happening outside, and, you know, your whole world is coming down, collapsing on you. And next thing, you know, you look out and you have to cover your hair and you have to do this, and the whole society looks different, and the TV is showing different things, and it's all about religion. And, you know, from a vibrant, very happy country going to such extreme, basically overnight, it kind of, as a child, it doesn't matter how old you are, it gets into your psyche and it starts to, you know, make you think completely different than a normal child would in under normal circumstances. Because you are seeing like everything around you is changing, and next thing, you know, they're bombarding, you're sitting in your house and then you're hearing bombings, there is invasion to your country, every time you turn TV on, there are dead people, body parts. So very quickly you become a critical thinker, you become very rational because it's a matter of life and death. You don't have the luxury of envisaging anything except, you know, how can I be smart to survive, or, you know, things like that. You know, it's basic survival stuff that takes over rather than just fantasies.
So you and your sister, why New Zealand of all places? Like, surely there was somewhere closer where you could enjoy freedom and rights, like somewhere in England? Why New Zealand? It's so far away.
Because at the time we could get here easier in terms of getting visas and stuff like that. And language was English. I think something that people, you know, discount about people migrating to New Zealand is so they don't have to learn a second language. They can go and start working or becoming, you know, studying. So the language was a big deal. And also the universities in New Zealand, they've got a great reputation. It's a very quiet, at the time, it had a population, I think, of 3 million or something.
Yeah.
It was very quiet, safe country. There were no crimes. So it kind of made sense. And, you know, we decided that it was a perfect place to go. Mm.
Jeez, a lot's changed here in the last 30 years. It's probably safer in Iran at the moment. A lot of crime here.
Yeah, in some ways, actually, you're right.
Yeah.
You are not safe from the government, but in terms of, you know, just people attacking you with samurai swords and, you know, guns and things like that, machetes, you know, Iran is much safer. Yeah. Mm.
So you come to New Zealand 16, 17 years old, and then, like, where do you begin? Where do you begin with setting up a new life? Did you come with much money? Did you have much savings or anything?
Not much much money. But we knew we had some friends here who were extremely amazing people who helped us set up. And, you know, that was a great thing. We kind of traveled a little, looked at New Zealand, settled in Auckland, got ourselves jobs until, you know, we went and studied and got our trainings in university, etc.
Yeah, back to Iran before you came to New Zealand. So I think of the hijab police.
Mm-hmm.
What are they exactly?
Well, that's an Arabic word. And it is basically what any covering that goes over a woman.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Now, you can refer to, you know, wearing something completely covered like the Taliban's, you know, and just have your eyes shown, for example, or even that covered too. That's hijab, but also having the scarf, that's hijab too. Mm-hmm. So it's just basically that covers woman. It's called hijab.
Right. So the hijab police, they're just making sure that every single person, every single woman is wearing a hijab at all times.
Yes, but wearing hijab correctly. That's where the issue is, because there is no set rule of how hijab should be worn. So it's up to the people that you come across in this, you know, hijab police, for example, if they're having a bad day or they just don't like the way somebody looks, or they can take you because you've got a tiny bit of hair showing, or somebody can just have scarf on their, you know, shoulder, and they will just ignore it. It depends on it. It's very unclear set of rules. That's where the issue comes from. That's why some of these people who are implementing their power can get away by murdering girls, for example, because there is no set rule. They don't really get punished at all. It is just what it is.
So this was how it was for you as a teenage girl in Iran. Yeah. Is it still like this now?
Yeah.
So if you go back to Iran now to visit your parents, you have to wear a hijab?
For sure. Of course. Past couple of years over this, or past year over what happened to Mahsa Amini and, you know, the murders, many of them, of young women and men, people, especially the younger generation, have become more aggressive.
Or defiant. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they are fighting the regime by removing their scarves. So you see, I see a lot of clips that they come out of Iran, and you see, you know, a lot of people who are fighting the rules. They don't wear their scarves. They go to the street just looking normal, you know. But then again, you know, they're risking their lives because there is no guarantee that they won't get killed.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like here where you can go to the parliament grounds and protest like the COVID mandates, is it? It's a very, very high risk opinion you're having.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I heard there was an incident where you ended up locked up in jail for like a week before you...
No, it was much longer. Before we came to New Zealand, me and my sister.
Because... So you're like 15, 16, right?
Yeah.
And you were incarcerated for how long?
I think it was about a month or something like that. But they let us go after, you know, a week or two, and then they locked us up again for another couple of weeks. And then, you know, it was on and off because they were like, we had to go to court, and we had to go to, they took us to, the only reason my sister and I managed to basically come out and not really get prosecuted was because they took us to, the forensic doctors to check out and make sure that we were virgins. Yeah.
For real?
Yeah.
I don't know if you want to get into this, but what does that entail?
So you go to, there's an establishment that is for forensic work and all that. So you go there and from jail, they put us all in this bus and they took us there. And then we had to be examined by these three people for them to write a certificate whether somebody is a virgin or not. You know, and then if you weren't, then it meant that, you know, you had less crimes. So,
do they bring your parents in for this exam?
No, nothing. Your parents have no say. They don't even let you call them.
So what happens if you fail this test?
And then they will ask you or interrogate you until you tell them who you had sex with, and they'll marry you.
Wow.
But it used to be that way those days. I don't know about now, but that's when I was 16. Yeah.
Yeah. So your parents, when they, how do they hear you're incarcerated? Do the guards or the prison or the authorities call them to say, hey, your daughter's incarcerated and this is why?
No, a friend of us knew that we were going to that party and was supposed to come and join us later. And then when she arrived, well, she obviously didn't come in because she saw the petrol, you know, cars. And so she had called and said that, you know, Gilda and Gita were in this party situation and it's been raided and they've taken them to jail. And
this is outrageous. Mm. Are your parents fucked off, or is it just like?
I mean, they can't do much, but the fact that, you know, he got us to go, you know, to go to the judge and, you know, all that, he did his best, and we kind of, they separated us because we were virgins too, and they put us in a different cell than the other people. So it was me, my sister, and this other girl out of the others. Yeah.
What a traumatic experience. You talk about it quite sort of nonchalantly now, like it's no big deal, but that's traumatic.
But, you know, we grow up like that. It's not like you go there and this happens to me and you'd be like, or you take a New Zealand teenager and, you know, they're like, oh my God, what the hell is happening? It gradually, when you grow up in that system, you know it's there, you know. You know it can happen. You know worse things can happen. You know you can go to jail, get raped, and then killed, and that's it. End of your life. But you can't stop living as a human. You can't shut up. And I think one of the reasons people tell me, oh, aren't you worried people say this and that? I'm like, no, I don't give a damn what people say. You live once.
Yeah, you've got a different perspective on things, I guess.
Yeah.
Oh, was it after that incident where you're like, that's it, we got to go? Yeah, okay. And you started looking up other places to go.
Well, my sister already, she was studying in this American university. She was doing physics engineering. But she didn't want to stay there. She wanted to come back and, you know, for us to go somewhere together. So when she came back, this thing happened. And then soon after, we got together, yeah.
Oh, that's a lot to go through. So were you in New Zealand when the Iran-Iraq war started, or did
no,
you?
No, we came here after.
Okay. What are your recollections of that?
Jeez, the war?
You've lived through a lot, haven't you?
Oh, of course, yes.
Yeah. New Zealand, the last 30 years in New Zealand must seem very boring compared to the first 17 years of your life.
You know, the start, it was quite odd. Because first of all, you come out and you don't have to cover yourself. And, you know, it's like getting used to the very basic, you know, rights of being a human being. Every time in Iran, they used to have these cars, which are like four-wheel drives, big, like Range Rovers or something. They used to belong to the morality police.
Morality police?
Yeah. So they just used to wander aimless in the streets to make sure no man is talking to a woman, no, you know, your hair is covered, you're not listening to music, you don't have makeup, you know, stuff like that. So we grew up with that above our head all the time, but we all sort of fought it, took risks, you know, little by little, dragged our little bit of freedom out at the risk that...
Boundaries, yeah.
Absolutely. So... coming to New Zealand, at the beginning, it was kind of like, oh my God, you know, I don't have to wait. But every time I used to see these four-wheel drives, I'd be like, oh, like, you know, in the car, oh my God. It takes a few seconds for you to sort of just adjust yourself and be like, oh, no, that's not the morality place, because you've grown up with it, you know, you don't know any better. So that was interesting. But once you get over that, then, it's good.
And what are your memories of the war? Did you have any like male friends or anyone that went to war?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. My dad actually went to war.
Really?
Yeah. He was doing something. He had a specialty that they took him. It had to do with mines and clearing mines and stuff like that. I know many people who died at war. Family, friends, because in Iran it's not like, oh, you believe in, you know, this regime, so you go to war. No, it was, you know, national emergency. The country was invaded just after revolution. We didn't even have an army. The very first responders were Basij, who were like local to each area that they went and stood against the invaders. Mm-hmm. Later on, it became a bigger sort of establishment of its own. Everybody, and also if you're in an age that you have to go to army, it's compulsory. You have to go. There is no ifs and buts or, you know, choice. A lot of people went. A lot of people got killed.
Because I've heard stories about like stadiums in Iran that were like repurposed as like a place. Yeah, like a morgue. With
kind of. Yeah, yeah, that's true. I was actually I lived in Tehran, which is the capital of Iran, and there was a time where we had this big attack. You know, it was like a pushback to the Iraqi soldiers, and so they called it the 100,000 people army, where 100,000 of young men all going to recruit and all going to do one insertion or one attack. And I think they all died. Most of them are died. Most of them died. And I remember because in the streets, we used to see them march on the way there. And there were so many of them. 100,000 is a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And after the attack, they brought back their bodies. And they couldn't even like, in majority of cases, they would just fill up bags with body parts. And they put like a tag, army tag in it and would give it to the people. They weren't even their kids, you know, they weren't even their children or family members. But the smell of it was everywhere. Tehran is a city of 20 million. At the time, it had like 15 million or whatever. Big city. It's a huge, you know. The smell is everywhere, you know.
Just the smell of death.
Yeah. Mm. It was, you don't forget things like that, you know. It was all these young, happy, hopeful people going brainwashed by the government to go and die for God or whatever. And, you know, they come back in bits and pieces like minced meat.
Do you have nightmares about it or anything?
No.
No. Did you at any time? How long did it take? You mentioned before how triggering it was seeing the vehicles in New Zealand that you thought might be the morality police. Yeah, like how long was it before, after you left Iran and came to New Zealand, that you felt like fully sort of relaxed? Like, okay, nothing bad's going to happen to me here.
I still don't. Why do you think I'm so vocal about the state of New Zealand? Because I'm worried. You never forget how things can change overnight and how humans can turn against each other, how, you know, an ideological sort of powerful system can come and disregard you as a human being for the greater good. You don't forget that. Why do you think, like, people ask me, oh, you know, you have such a nice life, you can go anywhere, you can do anything, you can wear. I'm like, yeah, but that can go away overnight. And I see, you know, during the process, for example, when I went down to Wellington, I saw all these people from all walks of life. Some had nothing. They were living in, you know, their cars because they lost their jobs. And that was triggering for me. That's when I was like, you know, nobody should ever sit and be quiet about what's happening. People should have a sense of responsibility towards their fellow humans. Because, you know, once your human rights is gone, it is very hard to get it back.
Mm.
You know, when things are taken away from you, it is very hard to get them back.
Yeah.
That's a fact of life. Anywhere, any, you know, political rules, boundaries, whatever comes in, they hardly ever leave. They're there to stay. And that's just so your freedom shrinking and shrinking and shrinking. And if you're not aware, if you don't take it serious, you know, yeah, sure, people tell me, oh, she's so, like, crazy. She thinks, you know, she's a conspiracy theorist, etc. That's okay. But, you know, for me, then again, I can put my head on my pillow and say I did the right thing for my children, for my fellow human beings, knowing that I did my best, whether it worked or it didn't work. But at least every day I'm thinking that. And so far, I think with this mandates and COVID issues and the way the government has handled stuff, I don't think I've ever made a mistake. I think I've been on point on everything that I stood for, and I'm glad that I did.
Yeah, it's quite funny, isn't it? It feels like we're almost at a stage now in society where if you have any sort of opinion that's not mainstream popular, it's just very easy to, yeah, put you in a box and say you're an alt-right conspiracy theorist.
Sure.
Seems to be at a state we're at now.
That's exactly that's how it works, this ideological sort of establishments coming in. The reason I don't care about that is because I grew up in one until I was 16. The most, you know, important years of my life, I learned how these things work. You know, I watched it happen. If you open your mouth, said anything, you're a heretic. You don't believe in Islam. You don't believe in the collective goodness, in the greater good. That's all excuse and bullshit. Because, you know, they're absolutely taking away the rights of the greater population for their own ideology. I don't agree with that. I've lived through it, and I can see that it started happening, not under Islamic ideology, but under a different ideology, where a group of people in power feel like they can dictate to everybody else how they should live. That's not being free. And it's worrisome because I don't want my children to go through what I went through. And yes, I know they've got a great life. We are in the most beautiful country in the world. And I love this country. But looking at overseas, what's happening there, and looking at New Zealand, the way they're going about things in New Zealand, to me, it's like, oh, shit, this is all happening again. Different way, but the same path. Mm.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You mentioned before you went to the COVID protests in Wellington. Are you vaccinated? Did you get the vaccine or no?
No.
I'm a sheeple. I just go along with whatever's going. Like, the government tells me to get three jabs, I'll get three fucking jabs. I just want to go with the path of least resistance. But I look back now and there was one of my good friends got married and I was a groomsman, and his mum had to have like a fake vaccine passport to even attend her own son's wedding because the caterers wouldn't let her in otherwise. And you look back now, it was only like 2 or 3 years ago, and you think, you know, she was sort of almost like a leper at her own son's wedding at that time. And it's only like recent history. And you look back now and go, well, maybe she had a fair point. Do you know what I mean? And there was people that were forced out of their jobs. Yeah. And you look back now and it's only a couple of years ago, and you think, well, maybe these people sort of had a point.
Thinking rationally and objectively becomes a crime. And you're being judged for making decisions for your own health or, doing your own research at the time, having with internet, obviously you have access to the best, virologists in the world, the best scientists in the world, and they are telling you after all their years, and this information was available before the vaccination came to New Zealand, and they were all worried about it, and they were very outspoken and verbal about it. It didn't take you could just go and find this information, and they were all valid. And make your mind. But when talking logic or taking ownership of your own life, all of a sudden is you being a heretic. Mm-hmm.
Like I was saying before, I think it's an easy box to put people into that have any sort of opinion that's not, mainstream or popular. It's like an easy box. Just call them alt-right conspiracy theorists.
Yeah, well, the thing is, you know, what bothers me is that it's a very hypocritical way that, our government has been dealing with a personal freedom. So if I come today and I say I'm a different gender and this is my pronouns, this is what I think, and everybody should respect that. Oh, yes, absolutely. Let's like raise all the flags and support, what you're saying, because you're an individual. We should respect your ideology. We should respect your thought, and we should respect your feeling. So I come in and I'm like, I'm a mother of two. I am worried. It's not enough research. I don't 100% trust this procedure. I want to take my time. Oh, you, you know, you're just a conspiracy theory. Why are you, you know, doing this? It's not all about you. You're being selfish. So what is it? Either do we have the personal freedom of thought and choice, or we don't.
Yeah.
Don't come at me and say, oh, you know, I come from, I don't know, some race or somewhere or some country. So I, you know, I'm more accepted because I have more thoughts. And everybody say, yeah. And everybody else has to shut up. That's not okay.
Mm.
If you give freedom and choice to people, then respect that and don't be hypocritical about it.
Would you ever get into politics? You got any interest in that?
I get asked about this question a lot. I don't have any interest to get into politics, but
you've got some very strong opinions,
and you're
very smart as well.
But I definitely have an issue with how our political system in New Zealand has been sort of handled. We vote, and we get these people in, they go, they make...
Hang on, Kanye, no. No. You're being very naughty. You're just bored about the COVID chat, I reckon. But I'm not. Yes. Well, so what you're saying is you.
So I believe that it needs to be kind of tackled, and people, we are voters and we have rights. But we vote these people in, they go in there with no accountability, do whatever they want. Nobody questions them. Nobody goes and holds them responsible. Hey, you promised these things. Where are they? What happened? We don't have an establishment like that. And I believe that we are in dire need of an entity that overlooks what government does in terms of making sure they deliver in any cooperation, anywhere you'll have that accountability except within this government and how, you know, they run it. Now, that doesn't exist in many other places in the world either, but it doesn't mean that it can't exist. And I believe that it is definitely, you know, we need a whole bunch of people who are experts and passionate who can come and make sure the government delivers what they promise.
Yeah. So we're recording this before the election. That'll come out sometime after the election. Who, do you know which way you're voting?
Yes.
Do you share that or no?
I have shared that, yes. I've said that I will vote National and NZ First. But you know,
NZ First?
Yes.
Winning?
Sure. I've never voted for him before, but people are like, oh, we have trust issues. Well, have you seen Luxon before in the parliament? No. David on top? No. Have you, you know, how do you know these people will deliver? You know, this guy, I'm looking at the odds. I'm thinking for the age that he is, the experience that he has, the fact that he's talking about these subjects that we've been shut down for a few years now, he's bringing it up, he's talking about them, he's advocating and standing up for a whole bunch of people that otherwise nobody gives a damn about. You know, this, like, I say that as an immigrant, and I talk to a lot of other immigrants, and they see the same way, because at the moment we see what happens, it's a thing between like the colonial white people and the Maori people. So great, you guys have your thing, but what about us immigrants? We are a big number of us in New Zealand who've been here for years, paid our taxes, we've delivered too. So I think we shouldn't be lost in the equation for what British colonial did to the Maori people. Mm. We came here too, and we got accepted, and we were given equal rights like every other citizen. But during the COVID, I have friends here from, Somalia, I have friends from Zimbabwe, I have friends from Nigeria, you know, while people are going out there screaming Black Lives Matter, at the same time, Ministry of Health says, oh, you know, if you get sick, if you are Maori or Pacifica, you'll go onto priority list to see a person in the hospital. So what, these African friends of mine are not, all of a sudden their Black lives doesn't matter?
Mm.
You can't have this. I understand this whole of the history of what's happened, but you can't take away other human beings' rights in order to prove a point or get more rights for yourself. This is wrong. And the government, you know, is in some ways, you know, they're pussyfooting around the subject. And the only person that comes out and says, no, everybody's equal. All these immigrants who've come to this country and contributed, they also are equal. They have rights. It shouldn't be this person is of this race, therefore this person has more priority or rights over another person. And I think I vote as an immigrant for Winston because he is for that equality.
Mm. He's a real character. I would love to get him on the podcast at some stage. He's been in Parliament for such a long time. Like you see footage from the 1970s and he's in there.
Yeah, he's actually quite a lot as well. You know, he's a very intelligent person. I socially,
you had much to do with him?
I socially have known him for very many years, over 20 years, but just here and there in social occasions. Recently, I did have him to come to my place. Democracy NZ and ACT, Winston, also National came, also O'Connor, Simon O'Connor. So I quite like to get different groups of people together and have them question and ask and make their decisions for themselves. Just don't be, you know, sheeple. Don't just be,
That's me.
Yeah. No, it's not you.
But no, it completely is. I just don't want to rock the boat. And some of the stuff you've said, I agree with, and I'm sure a lot of people would, but most of us will just bite our tongues or keep our mouths shut because you don't want to stick your neck out. And you do, and I admire that about you.
Thank you.
And there's traits that you have that I wish I had more of, and I'm sure a lot of people listening to this would, but we're like, oh, I don't need the aggravation in my life.
I totally understand that.
It's a poor attitude, though, isn't it?
Look, not every human being has gone through the same experiences, and we don't all have the same personalities. Hence, we all have different perspectives and different way of thinking and looking at things. So that's okay. You know, some people are shy. Some people just don't want to be bothered because, you know, it puts too much stress, anxiety on them. I think I've overcome all that when I was a child. So.
do you just need some sort of friction or some sort of even mild drama in your life?
I don't. I actually hate that. I'm a good time person. Yeah. I love good times. I love family time. I love getting together, cooking, traveling, my kids, you know. I like everything that everybody else, normal human beings like, you know, just a, you know, basic happiness. However, it is not, you know, hence I didn't like Dancing with the Stars because I hate competition. I'm not a competitive person. I don't care if somebody wins or, you know, to me, it's all the same. But unfortunately, when I go to like sort of a mode where I get worried or sort of stressed and, you know, I get triggered, that I see a change, that I don't smell anything good coming out of it, that's when I go to this kind of a aggressive mode where I'm like a barking chihuahua everywhere.
Well, I love that. And you're a mum of two fairly young boys as well. So you're obviously concerned about how the future's going to look for them in New Zealand.
That is the main thing.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for my kids, I was
don't worry, I'll stay off Twitter.
I'll be like, I'm just going to go and live a fabulous life and then give a damn about anybody else. But the reality is when you're a parent, you're a mother or father, you worry. You don't think about you at that time. You think about what is to come for the future of your children. Because unfortunately, with my past, you know, growing up in a country like that, you know, I always was like, oh my God, my kids, I've done so well. My kids will have a fabulous life and they look at the sea.
How's your mental health been? Like, do you have any, you've talked about being triggered by some things. You said you haven't had any nightmares. Do you have any like PTSD or your mental health's been like pretty good over there? You know, there's been no time as an adult where, you know, you've had to go and like unpack or readdress some of the early stuff.
Yeah, but I'm kind of,
because you do seem like remarkably resilient and strong and level-headed. Do you think part of that comes from the adversity that you suffered early on?
Yes. You know, what I grew up with, at the time, if I hadn't managed as a child to deal with it and sort it out, I would have not survived. I would have been an absolute mess. But as everything was happening, it was just, you know, I was taking it, analyzing at a very young age, you know, dealing with it and understanding it. You know, when it's quite a strange feeling, you know, where you, you know, you're asleep and then all of a sudden the bombs are dropping on you and you have to run outside. Well, there is no real place you can go and hide, right? But you just go under, you know, your house in the garage or something.
Yeah, your house is the safe place. Yeah,
but it's just that whole, you know, it's a useless practice, but it's that whole notion of, oh, I'm doing something to stay alive, you know, that takes your sort of fear away, or you get over, you don't think about the bombs dropping. And you go and you're like, oh, it has stopped. And then you count it. Like there were 8 bombs, for example, today, and rockets or whatever. And then you think, oh, there are people, like I'm alive, but a whole bunch of other people have died.
Mm.
And as harsh as it sounds, you think, oh, I'm a survivor. I win this. I'm still alive. You don't really think that much about these other people who've died. And then next day you see on TV all these buildings collapsing of people dying. I think going through that, today's stuff aren't.
That's nothing. Yeah, like every day's a blessing for you. Every day's a good day.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, like, you know, I'm going back to your original question about the gold digger and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, we'll get to that.
You know, one of the reasons, for example, you know, I like when I was going to uni and generally I just wouldn't gel with young New Zealand men. It's just they had a whole different sheltered life and none of them really understood, you know, like I couldn't talk to them about politics. I couldn't talk to them about like, in the international stuff or, you know, a whole bunch of experiences that I had. I hardly could find anybody who had, you know, you could talk to them and they will sit there and look at you like, what the fuck? And that was it, you know.
As I said at the beginning of this, I find you very intimidating because you're very intellectual.
No, you're very smart. No, it's not about that, but it's like I've lived a life, you know. So when I met my ex-husband, he had been a young immigrant to New Zealand. You know, he started from nothing. He came from a very conflicted place, you know, his parents were Irish, so his mom was orange and his mom was green and his dad was orange. It's a no-go. So his father's family tried to shoot his father because, you know, it was a sacrilege to mix Protestant and Catholic.
Mm.
So they had to move and go and live elsewhere. And you know, so he understood. And then when he was a child, his father went to war. He understood the concept of war. He was a young immigrant. You know, he went through a lot of stuff emotionally that I went through in different settings, in different time zones. Mm. But the same experiences, you know. Coming here at very young age on his own, you know, jumping ship. So him and I really gelled and connected, you know, although there was, you know, he was much older than me, but it just worked. We were like, whoa, you know, we get each other. And that to me was my digging gold.
Yeah. So this is your. You are you still legally married? You broke
I don't
up.
Know. Or, we, no, you we divorced. Divorced because it was actually amicable. At the time, like for a couple of years, we were discussing that I was like, oh, you know, I think I'm gonna want to have children so we can adopt or, you know, get a donor, etc. And he was firmly against that, and he told me that
because he already had adult kids, or he just didn't want to do it again.
And I was like, fine. And so anyway, it took kind of a couple of years, and we were like, even when I had my first child, we were still living together, you know. So we were very open about the process, what happened, and we are still best friends. I see him, you know, a couple of times a week.
So this is James Kirkpatrick, who's 43 years old. So he's how old now? Like 93?
Yeah,
93. So when you got together, you were
26, I think.
26, and so he was 20, 40, for like early 70s.
No, I think 69 like, right. or something. Yeah.
Right. And you just like attracted to the intellect?
Yeah. It was that. We just, you know, had so much to talk about. He was so charming, you know. We had lots of friends in common. That's how I met him. And he originally told me and my sister that he was doing some project in Otahu, I think, or something. Mm. And he wanted our help because at the time, you know, we studied architecture. So, and that was his, you know, he was a developer. And then he gave a project, I think, to do his offices or something like that. So it was kind of a gradual thing. He just one time out of the blue, he was like, oh, you know, introduce me to some of his friends as my fiance. And I was like, what the, you know, like, it was just funny. It was, you know, and it kind of was like, oh, why not? You know, it wasn't like a passionate thing.
Slow burn where you just sort of got on really well. And
it was. Yeah, but it was never about, you know, lust, and it wasn't. Our friendship, it was full of respect. Mm. Our age difference was a lot. He was going through some stuff at the time, and it just worked. It was more like a great friendship that got the marriage stamp on it. Yeah.
So it was a great friendship, and you connected on an intellectual level, but it must have been nice to know he was rich as well.
You know, it was. Yeah. It was. But
like just for the security aspect, if nothing else.
To be fair, it was, it's the, you know, people might look at it a funny way, but when a person comes from nothing and achieves what he had achieved, it is, you know, you just develop this respect and like, wow, you know. It's the same as like some of these like scientists or people that you look that they've created something. They don't have much money, but intellectually they're like, whoa, you know, you've achieved this. And, you know, they've got like professors, penniless professors who are, you know, all these young girls falling in love with them. It's kind of like that. The fact that he had managed to do so many, terrible jobs and, you know, live in such poverty, yet get himself there. That was so admirable.
Yeah, you know, that's who's a turn-on, isn't it? Someone that's
who's not to fall in love with that. You know?
So you got married. What was the judgment like? There must have been a lot of judgment from a lot of people. Did that hurt or not really?
I didn't care.
Yeah,
he didn't care. I was like,
my partner. We get a lot of that. You know, you do. And it's
but I don't understand, Dom. It's just people are, just, you know, if you go and marry a handsome rich prince, oh my God, you've done so well. It's like, what the? And then he goes and has affairs and dumps you 2 minutes later. And they, why is it that we celebrate people who go after like this crazy package that, has been promoted in, I don't know, Disneyland or Hollywood.
It is. It's Disney
of
movies.
People. Oh, this person has to be certain height and looks like this and a certain age and body like this and this much and a nice car or whatever. Oh my God, what a great girl. We go and celebrate people who go for the cliche of Hollywood and Disney bullshit, the prince and princess story. And, oh, people cry over it. Oh, my God, she married this prince. And then people who go and marry whoever they want, you know, old or young or whatever. Who cares?
Mm.
So should you go and criticize somebody who marries a billionaire who is young and handsome also? Should you call them a gold digger?
Well, yeah, it's no different, is it?
It's
no different. And obviously, you know, if you're just in it for the money, there's no way you're going to be married for 15 years, let alone break up and still be
best friend. Best friends. He loves the kids. He loves my partner. We're best friends. He's extremely supportive. You know, he spent a couple of months last Christmas with us, you know, up north. There is no, you know, he doesn't have an issue. And like, people are like, oh, you know, it's like, he doesn't have an issue. I don't have an issue. What is it to you?
Mm. I love that. How's his health now? Is he okay?
He's okay. Yeah. He goes to work.
Right, does he?
Yeah. He goes to
work. Jeez, that's great. Mm. In your 90s, you're in Sniper's Alley, aren't you?
But he's not a normal person.
What do you mean?
Yeah, he's just always been, you know, with the amount of wealth he has, he lives so moderately. You know, he's not a kind of a guy who
not
goes
flashy.
To work to make money, to flash and buy this and that, and you know, he goes to work because he believes in productivity. He believes in what he does, and you know, hardly ever you come across people like that.
Mm. But in a funny way, that's probably what's kept him fit and healthy and vital. I mean, you stop work at 50, 60, 70, whatever, and then what happens? If that's all you know, then it's almost like you've lost that purpose, that reason to wake up in the morning.
He always used to say, the day I stop working, I'll die.
Yeah.
You know, because to him, like even like nowadays they deliver for him, but like when he used to go and supermarket and shop, he used to like be worried about 2 cents more and 2 cents less. You
know? Was that just a hangover from his like povo upbringing?
No.
His early years?
No, it's just him.
Right.
You know,
he's just a tired ass.
It's not, he looks at it as value.
Right.
He doesn't believe in wasted.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how hard is it when you broke up after 15 years? You said it was amicable, but was it?
Oh, it was on the cards. We had talked about it. It wasn't public, you know. It wasn't. We are still, you know, the same. Nothing has changed. You know, from the day I met him to now, nothing really has changed.
Mm.
I see him less because we're not living together. That's basically it. But other than that, nothing really has changed.
So I think it was around this, probably this time, putting a timestamp on the conversation, where you were married to James, that you became like a socialite. Like I just moved up to Auckland from Palmerston North.
What year was that?
Like in the early 2000s.
Right.
And it's every weekend there's the Herald on Sunday, and they had a section called Spy. Ricardo Simich does it now, but I think it was this lady called Bridget Saunders.
Yes, yeah.
And you were like in the paper every weekend.
Yeah.
Always going out to things.
Sure.
Why was there so much interest in you?
You know, it's funny because people misunderstood the situation. People were like, oh, you're looking for exposure and fame. You know, like, for what? What happened is that before that, James didn't really have a public profile. It was quite bad. But I think putting him and me together, all of a sudden, it was just this novel. In Europe, young women marry old men all the time. In Middle East, they marry all the time. Nobody cares. But in here, it was like, oh. so it was, to them, it was really intriguing. And, you know, they started picking on me. They started, you know, writing in gossip columns before even I, you know, oh, James and has married this Gilda. So what I did was like, well, there is no shame. I'm not going to hide from this. Do you want a picture? You come and take a picture. You know, if it's a freak show, come, I'm the freak, take the picture. And that was my attitude. I'm not going to go and hide because I married somebody older. Mm. You know, it's a thing, you know, kings used to marry young people all the time. They were celebrated, but here it was like, oh my God.
I had Rachel, you know, Rachel Hunter, do you know her?
Yes.
I had her on the podcast, and she had an interesting take on that because we talked about the power imbalance of, you know, her and Rod Stewart. So she was in her early 20s, he was in his 40s, I think, and he was, you know, a famous pop star. And her take on it is that there's also power in youth and beauty.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So she's like, Rod didn't have all the power and I was just this hopeless young thing. It's like, and I suppose it's the same thing with you guys. Like he was older than you and had the money, but you know, you had your youth and your beauty and there's power in that.
You know, it's, you know, everything in life that we do, there is exchange. If you fall in love with somebody, a prince and, you know, a princess from different countries, they get married. There is always other ulterior motives too. If somebody makes you feel bad, you don't want to go out with them. You don't want to be with them. You don't want to marry them. If somebody doesn't give you that right vibes or so it's kind of give and take. Yes, if I was of a certain age, I suppose, if I had a different figure, if I looked differently, if my brain didn't work the way it did, that didn't connect with them. There was no way out of all these people in the world, he would want to marry me. You know?
Yeah.
So it's not like, oh, let's go and find myself a rich old man. And you know, you're not shopping. It has to work both ways. One of the smartest, cleverest human beings alive saw me and chose me and connected with me. You know, he was extremely successful, very, very, very smart, you know. Nobody could fool him. So to me, that was a compliment that, wow, this guy with all his mighty can see me and connects with me and we can talk about the same things. He respects my opinion. He asks me for advice, you know. So that gave me this, you know, sort of feeling of grandeur, you know, and especially as somebody who came here so young without a family, lacking a dad all my life. You know, now I've reconnected with my dad about 14 years ago. Before that, I never saw him. So it was kind of, he was all of a sudden a whole family, you know?
Yeah, actually, I never thought about that because I thought the relationship with both your parents was sound, but I suppose gold diggers are something that people would say. And another thing people would say would be daddy issues.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah. Sure. So maybe an element of daddy issues?
So my problem was I couldn't connect to anybody around my own age because they were just too immature.
Yeah.
You know, I had lived this life of very intense and younger people to me were like, oh, let's go get drunk. You know, I'm like, oh, God, you know, those days I didn't even drink. You know, it was like, you know, and I was working all the time. But he kind of gave me that whole package of security, family, and somebody who understands, somebody who makes me feel safe. So I don't feel like, oh, this young guy is going to leave me. Like my dad left my mom. My dad was very handsome. Mm. You know, he was all that character, personality, and money. It was everything. But he always kind of was very independent doing his own thing. And my mom was always like, oh, still my mom blabbers about my dad. You know, he's still not over that. I never wanted to put myself in that situation where I would be left behind or had to deal with an affair or that was like, oh, that's just my red zone. I will never red line cross that. And with him, I was like, okay, he's older. He's not going to go and have affairs on me. He's not going to do this. He's not going to leave me, you know. So it made me feel secure and safe. And so what? He was older. Who cares? You know?
Yeah. And so you guys got married. And is that when you bought the house you live in now?
No, we lived.
What's it called? The cake house. No, what's the?
They call it the wedding cake.
The wedding cake house. Yeah, it's one of the most famous and I guess visible houses in Auckland. For anyone that's not in Auckland, if you're driving along the waterfront, Tamaki Drive towards Kelly Tarleton's, it's a big one up on the hill. And look, does it look like a wedding cake? Doesn't really look like a wedding cake, does it?
Well, I don't know why they call it. See, Connie just wanted to come and give me kisses. You just wanted to come and sit with me. You're making all that noise because you were down there and not up here.
Yeah. So that's I don't think I've ever been to your house, but I drive past it. It's a big house and it's a very handsome property.
Thank you. No, we lived up the road at number 5 for I think about 5 years, and then this property became available. And I always liked it, because it was, immigrant, you come to New Zealand, the first thing you do, you go to Mission Bay on the way. Oh my God, that house. And there's a famous area in Tehran where I live. It's called Sharhaqab, and it's got all these houses on the cliff, and it always reminded me of home, you know? Right. So I was like, oh, that house is so dreamy. It's like round. It looks like some sort of a, you know, castle. So when it came available, James was like, hey, I remember he came home and he said, oh, your favorite house is in the market. I'm going to go knock on the door and see, you know, if they're...
Oh, that's so sweet.
Yeah, so he bought it and I renovated the whole thing. I project managed, did the whole thing basically. And then he was like, oh, you know, this house is like nice, but... You know, the next door is available now. Maybe I should buy that. We do that. I mean, move there. And I was like, so he went and bought number 92. But I was like, I just like number 90 because I brought all the material. Yeah. So he sold it a few years ago, but the number 92 next door. But yeah.
Yeah. Is that your forever home? Do you think you'll live there?
Well, you know, there is no forever anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is home to us. The kids love it.
Who lives there? You can't be doing the cleaning yourself. It's massive, right? Like sprawling.
No, I have had a housekeeper with me for 18 years.
Like a live-in house cleaner?
No, she's a housekeeper. Oh. She basically owns the house. She's a family. She's very close. So she's been with me for a very long time. Yeah.
Right. Right. And do you have like an aquarium in there with turtles?
I think I do.
Really? It's one of those things that you hear, and I'm not sure if it's like real or an urban myth. Is that right? How big's this tank? Like Kelly Tarleton's big.
No. It's the same width as,
as a wardrobe.
That, yeah.
Okay. How big are the turtles? Oh, yeah, like 30 centimetres? Yeah.
No, not that size at the moment.
Yeah.
They're only a couple of years old.
How many bedrooms is this house? Have you got around to counting them all yet?
Yes. We have 4 bedrooms, an office, and then there's a outhouse, which is like a suite on its own with kitchen, bathroom and everything. Oh, yeah. Separated.
Is that on Airbnb?
No. Oh, yeah. My mom stays there.
Oh, okay. I think you could probably get a couple of $100 a night on that. Let's get into the reality TV stuff then. So what came first? Was it Dancing with the Stars? Then?
No.
Okay. So it was Real Housewives?
Yeah.
So that was that was on Bravo, went for one season?
One season.
Yeah. Why the hell did you go on that? You must have watched some of the other series from overseas and realised that, yeah, it's just, is it like we were talking about before, you need a certain level of like drama or friction in your life? Because that's exactly what you're setting yourself up for with a show like that, isn't it?
Well. At the time, I was like passionate about this book I was working on. And when I had a meeting with them, they came and approached and they said that it was a great platform if you wanted to promote a product or whatever that, you know, you have. And I was like, oh, what a great idea. I can promote my book, because what I wanted to do at the time, I didn't write a book to write books. I didn't do the books because I wanted to have books out there. I wanted to have a couple of books so then I could go and try to get them into animation series. So at the time, that was my thought. And I believed in the concept of the books, you know.
What was it, like sci-fi books for kids?
It was 100% based on astrophysics and real science. So I had 2 consultants from Auckland University who were astrophysicists, and they helped me with all the scientific stuff. And it's educational. And I had feedbacks from a whole bunch of people who had autistic children or who couldn't concentrate on science yet, because this book was pictures. For the first time, apparently, they had shown interest and learned science, learned about, you know, solar system and our galaxy. So that was my passion. And I was like, oh, what a great idea. So I get some like free publicity too. Mm. And then I went and I never watched this show. So when I watched as a researcher, I was like, shit, that's like, you know, that's pretty intense.
It is.
There are some psycho people in there. and then I thought, oh, well, for years I've been everywhere. There is nothing that I have in the closet. I've never, you know, I've been an open book. What's going to happen, you know? So that was my approach. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's why I kind of partook in that thing. And it was great. And, you know, it opened some doors. Mm. I couldn't get the animation thing going. It was going to be too costly.
All right.
So I kind of let go of that.
So no regrets about going on that show?
No.
No, you enjoyed it. So who did you know beforehand? You were friends with Michelle and Louise?
I knew Michelle. We weren't friends. I basically was friends with nobody in there. We knew each other. And like, I didn't know Louise. I had saw her on TV, I think. I knew Anne, I think, just very distant.
Oh, the champagne lady.
Yeah, right. Very distant.
With the cats.
Yeah, and I think Julia, I had seen her, I think at some point she was going off with somebody that I knew, but never like friends, like just hi, you know, kind of a thing. So I really didn't, you know.
Right. And then there was Angela, the Christchurch lady.
I didn't know her at all.
Yeah. And that provided one of the most famous lines, I think, from the series, which became like a meme. I think this is even before the word meme was a thing. What was your line? Do you know what I've heard about you? Absolutely nothing. Is that the line?
No, not a fucking thing. Not a
It's a great line. It's a great line. Was that sort of like pre-prepared or no?
No, it was not. It was an ambush.
That is savage. That is absolutely savage. When you cut someone down like that, like, do you feel a little bit bad afterwards at any stage?
No. Well, she came for it. She was sitting there making up all this rubbish. And I'm like, she's like the word in the street. I'm like, what are you? Like a drug dealer in the street? You know the word in the street? Who knows the word in the street? So, no, that was like, no, she's all right. It was just like the production trying to push a certain...
Stir shit, of course. Yeah.
To make the show watchable, basically, or, you know, shock people. And it is basically a formula. There's a very, very clear formula into all those shows.
100%, like a template that they follow.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I don't blame her. I have no animosity towards anybody on that show.
Mm.
It was... interesting. It was funny. I didn't get hurt by it. If anything, it was very entertaining for myself.
And so your kids were young at the time. Will they have you got a copy of it, like online or on DVD, that they'll watch one day?
I think they gave us a DVD. I don't have a DVD player. I don't know where you can watch it.
Yeah.
Surely there are. I think they're still airing them in some countries.
Right.
Yeah.
That's probably online somewhere, YouTube maybe. You may not want to answer this, but are your kids through like IVF?
No, I'm living with their dad.
Oh, your current partner. You guys have been together a long time.
Yeah.
Right. So James didn't want to have kids, so you guys end up going your separate ways.
Yes.
Then you met this new fella.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. That's cool. How old are the kids now?
10, and the other one just turned 8 now.
Right. Are they good kids?
Yes, very good kids.
Yeah.
I think they are good kids. They are not menaces.
But do you have like live-in help, like nannies or staff?
No, when they were younger, because I was working all the time. I was like a workaholic, basically, until COVID hit. So I was in the office all the time, and with my... our job, we kind of entertain clients, etc. You know, advertising, it's a very buzzy.
Yeah, so this is a company called Us & Co. that you set up and you're creative
director?
No,
I set up Rascals and then we changed it to Us & Co. And then we had some people that we didn't want to work with. So my partner and I set up another company, which is still going, which is called Hello.
Mm-hmm. Why did you work so hard? You didn't really need to.
Because I just need to be... busy, and I'm one of those people that has to be very, you know, my brain has to work.
Mm.
Otherwise, I don't know what will happen.
Yeah.
Throw problems at me and I'll sort them.
Yeah. And then your next reality TV experience was Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah.
Who was on that was the Susie Cato season?
Yeah.
Susie Cato, who else? Who else was on that? Can you remember? Who
won that David one? Seymour.
Oh, yeah. Seymour, yeah.
Amanda Haidt.
Oh, Samantha Hayes.
Samantha.
Oh, yeah, she won, right?
She won.
Yeah. And you were. I had David Seymour on the podcast earlier this year. I loved him. We talked in depth about his Dancing with the Stars experience and a bunch of other stuff. He's a good man.
Yeah.
So you went on Dancing with the Stars. Why did you go on that? Did you think you might enjoy the experience?
I thought it was a dancing competition, and I'd never danced. And I was like, oh, it's a good fitness. But also, it was for charity. And I didn't even get my money or my fee. I gave that all to Starship. So I was like, oh, why not? You know, it's, and then I went in there. I was like, oh, it's too much politics. And I just hated it.
Mm. Put too much politics in what way?
You know, there was so much going on. And I just didn't like it. And I'm not a great dancer anyway.
Yeah.
So, and I hate competition. So it wasn't just my cup of tea, you know.
Yeah. On these shows, generally, no one wants to be the first voted off. But you were relieved. You were.
I was. You know, I was never going to win.
Yeah.
That's you know, and I was like, oh, you know, it disrupts your life, basically. And I had kids and I didn't think that it would be as intense as it was. And I wasn't any good at it anyway, you know. Mm. It wasn't like I had any chance. And it wasn't really about dancing. It was about popularity more. I mean, I don't think David was a great dancer either, but he lasted long. Or, you know, your friend from Rock Station.
Rog.
Yeah. You know, so it wasn't like dancing, you know. Lots of people couldn't dance very well. And lots of good dancers kind of, you know, I saw, for example, Naz got kicked off too early. She was a very good dancer. So it was more about, you know, how, you know, once you go in there, you're like, oh, I see what it is. You know, how can I compete, for example, in reality with these people who've got such massive platforms and people love them. There are these big time celebrities, you know, but without people, for example, like me, how are they going to have a show? You have to have some people that you sacrifice and then you get to your...
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose the sort of people that are invested in that show enough to vote are the people that would see Naz and go, no, I don't like her with her with her fake boobs. Don't like Gilda because she's a gold digger or whatever.
Yeah, sure.
And that's why you're
not
gonna...
real boobs, but she's a gold digger.
Have you had much work done? What do you do? In terms of cosmetic surgery?
No.
But a Botox? No.
Botox for sure, yes.
Yeah.
But I'm not a big, say, like, in saying that, like, in fact, it's a good subject to brought up. I've always had, like, big-sized breasts, and I hate breasts because you can't wear whatever. You always have to wear, like, kind of a low, otherwise you will look puffy. And I know your ex-wife went through this.
Yeah, JJ. She had a reduction. It was expensive, too, like 25 grand or something.
Yeah, so I'm actually looking at reduction.
Oh, you should talk to JJ about it. She swears by it.
Yeah.
She loves it. No regrets about it at all.
Yeah, I watched her on Instagram, though, and I was like, I was like, God, it leaves a scar. So I've always been scared of it. But after watching it, I was like, oh, maybe I should do that. And, you know, as you get older, it just becomes more inconvenient. So I think that I'm going to have that procedure done.
Yeah. Well, you should definitely talk to JJ about it. She's got no regrets about it at all.
Yeah. Apparently, it's like whoever gets it, they're like, why didn't I do it earlier?
Mm.
But, you know, in high school, you have boobs and you're always like hunching and it's just not a, you know, it's just not a thing.
You're 50 now. How's the rest of your life going to look? What's the plan? You're going to stay in New Zealand? Would you ever move back to Iran? Was New Zealand home?
You know, anybody who knows me, they will tell you, I have never, ever had a plan in my life. I don't envisage the future. Just whatever happens, I'll just go with the flow. My brain hasn't been, trained to think that way, considering how volatile my life was as a child. Mm. So it was day-to-day decisions, never like a vision for, you know, future. Never knew who I wanted to be, what I wanted to be, what job, what subject. So no, I don't have any plan. Will I stay in New Zealand? I don't know. Will I go? I don't know. It depends on what happens, you know? Yeah. I don't know. I have no specific plan for anything. I just, at the moment, I'm kind of just wanting to have a stability for the kids with their schooling and stuff.
Kanye, what is it?
Where do you want to go?
What is it? What are you doing? He's been very restless today. Hey, well, this has been fun.
That long tongue of yours.
It is long, eh? Doesn't matter how tightly you purse your lips shut, the tongue will find a way in.
It is the narrowest tongue I've ever
narrowest
seen.
Tongue.
What is this thing? Oh my goodness.
I think he's a good judge of character, and he's always liked you.
I know. I have a picture with him at radio station, him kissing me.
Yeah.
We were kissing.
Loves kissing you. Loves kissing you.
Oh, I love you, buddy.
Yeah, well, hey, thanks for coming over, Gilda, and being so generous with your stories and your experiences. Would you call yourself like a proud New Zealander now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've spent most of my life here.
So you're Iranian, is that how you say it?
Iranian.
Iranian and Kiwi.
Well, I was born in Iran.
Yeah.
And I'm in New Zealand, though. I have a New Zealand passport. So, you know, it's funny, you know, people... Every time we go out and I say, oh, so where are you from? Are you visiting? How long are you? Because of my accent.
It's still very strong. And it kind of makes you sound like a villain in a Bond movie.
No, I think it's my stubborn character.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I spoke English when I was young. So when I came here, I already spoke English.
As your second language?
Yeah. So I've never changed my accent. My accent is still the same as it was when originally I arrived here. And I guess that says something about me, stubborn. I just don't understand. Oh, my accent. No, I should speak like a Kiwi.
Can you though? What is it? How does it sound like when you try and do?
I
feel like when you were doing, it was almost like an impression earlier of James.
Oh.
You almost flipped into a voice.
Maybe. I don't know. Subconsciously, maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah. But I don't know. I don't think I can do Kiwi accent. If I do, it will be like one of those terrible like cliches that Americans would do. Or
you got to give it a go. Let's hear it.
Like what?
Just say something.
Honestly, nothing comes to mind. I'm trying hard.
We need to get some wines in you for that.
Yeah, probably.
You're the same age as me, 50. Any regrets? Anything you'd change? Anything you'd do differently if you had your time over again?
No.
That's cool. I think that's probably a good place to end it. Thanks so much for coming over today.
Thanks, Nam. You're great, and you know, I've known you for quite a long time, and you're just always so, you know, I like watch your Instagram, and you're always racing and running in this marathon. And I always like, and I'm like in my bed. like you're like an energizer battery, and you know, it's really nice because it gives some sort of a good motivational energy and thoughts, and you know, to people like me who are not very active.
Are you not very active?
I used to be like a freak. I used to go to gym like 5 times a week. I've always done boxing or kickboxing. I still do 4 times a week, but my trainer at the moment, he's been away for 5 weeks. He went to US, he's just back. So Monday I'll start back again. But the way you do it, I'm not a cardio person. Like I can't run to save my life. Or maybe it's because of my, you know.
You just touch your boobs then, for the people that are listening to this. Yeah, you should look into getting a reduction. When JJ got hers done, the amount they took out was alarmingly small. It was like maybe 750 grams each boob. And she was like, you should take out more. And he's like, no, you don't want to look out of proportion.
Mm.
You want, but she loves them. The job that this guy did was perfect.
Apparently it makes life. So probably if you ask me after I do this, then I'll say, oh, why didn't I get a boob job earlier?
Yeah, probably. Hey, well, Gilda, I'm doing it again. I'm getting all nervous. Gilda Kirkpatrick. what was your name before marriage?
Sadie.
What is it? Sadie. Right. How come you kept James's name?
Because.
Just why change it? Yeah.
You know, already stuck, you know, why shouldn't I?
Yeah.
You know, it's just, that's me.
Yeah. Would you get married again? Like your baby daddy and your current partner? Are you guys just happy?
We are happy.
Yeah.
I mean, why, you know, kick a horse or what is that expression? I forgot. Actually,
that does seem like, I don't know if that's a saying, but it should be. Why kick a horse?
Things are going well.
Why rock the boat?
Or something like that.
But don't kick the horse either. All right, Gilda. Hey, I love you very much, and thank you so much for coming over today and being so generous with your stories. I got a lot out of it, and I hope a lot of other people did too.
Thank you. I'm sure a lot of people will listen to it and go to sleep very nicely in the middle of it. But thanks for giving me the chance, and great to see you again.
Patrick on the Dom Harvey podcast. Thank you so much for listening all the way through. What do you think? Always keen to hear your thoughts and opinions, good or bad. Genuinely, I mean this. You can reach me anytime you want, domharveynz@gmail.com or on Instagram, domharveynz. One thing I really like about doing this podcast is getting to speak to people from different walks of lives, people that may have different experiences or different outlooks than what you have, and trying to figure out what makes them tick. So, yeah, love to hear from you with any thoughts you have on that episode or any other episodes, guest suggestions, anything else. Hey, quick favour, if you haven't done so already, chances are you're listening to this podcast on Spotify or Apple. If it's on Spotify and you haven't done so already, could you give the podcast a rating? Preferably 5 stars. Thank you. And Apple, I know they allow reviews. So if you haven't left a rating or a review yet, please do so. That would be much appreciated. Just before we go, thank you very much to Radix Nutrition for sponsoring this episode. Get amongst their incredible protein powder and smoothie recovery powders. You've heard me bang on about it. I'm obsessed with their banana-flavoured protein, but they now have and unflavored protein powder in their range. So if it's not really your thing, you can mix it into various recipes and it won't taste any difference. But most important thing, it'll give you the protein hit that you need. Most of us could do with more protein than what we're currently consuming, and protein powder is the best and most effective way to get it. And in my opinion, nobody does it as well as what Radix does. Check out them and their world-class products at radixnutrition.co.nz. That's spelled R-A-D-I-X. I almost guarantee once you try their products out and become a customer, you'll be a fan for life. I know that's what my personal experience was. Hey, thank you so much for being here. Thanks for listening to the podcast. I genuinely appreciate it, and I hope to see you next week on the Dom Harvey Podcast.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.